Chapter 42. Holden. Arnold Mfume, who wasn't Alex, came out of the crew quarters still drying his hair. When he saw Holden and Foster, the two captains, by the coffee machine, he grimaced. "Running a little late there, Mr. Mfume," Foster Sales said.
"Yes, sir. Chava just pointed that out to me. I'm on my way."
"Coffee?" Holden said, holding out a freshly brewed bulb.
"Little milk, no sugar. Might not be how you take it, but it's ready now."
"I won't say no," Mfume said with a fast, nervous smile. Holden couldn't place his accent. Flat vowel sounds and swallowed consonants. Wherever it came from, it sounded good on him. As Holden handed over the bulb, Foster cleared his throat.
"You know, it's a bad habit to be late for your shift."
"I know, sir. I'm sorry, sir. It won't happen again."
And then Mfume was gone, bolting up the ladder toward the cockpit faster than the lift would have taken him. Foster sighed and shook his head.
"It's good being young," he said, "but some people wear it better than others."
Holden tapped in an order for another coffee.
"I wouldn't want people to judge me by what I did in my 20s. What about you? Can I get you one?"
"More of a tea man myself," the other captain said, "if that's an option. Don't know that I've ever tried."
"No?
There was always coffee."
The morning meeting had started off as just part of the shakedown. Between the new crew and the uncertainty surrounding the ship, it had seemed like a good idea for Holden and Foster Sales to touch base with each other, compare notes, make sure that everything was the way it was supposed to be. The care Foster took to treat the Rossi with respect had helped Holden. The new crew wasn't his, and he didn't feel comfortable with them, but they weren't going through the real crew's lockers while no one was looking. And day by day, their presence was growing more familiar, less strange. When he called down to engineering and Cousin Sakis, or Ip, replied, it didn't seem as wrong anymore. Finding Sun Yi and Gore wired into gaming goggles shooting the crap out of each other in simulated battles because, as weapons techs with no one to shoot at, they were getting antsy, stopped being weird and edged into sort of endearing. Maura Patel was spending her insomniac, sleepless shifts upgrading the tight beam system. Holden knew it was something Naomi had on her list of projects, but he let Maura do it anyway. And after the long, quiet days in the dock, sleeping in his couch and waking to an empty ship, part of him even appreciated the company. They might be the wrong people, but they were people. Having guests in his house kept him from descending into his fear and anxiety. He was only putting on a brave face, but it actually made him feel a little braver.
"Anything else I should be aware of?" Foster asked.
"Just I want to know if anything happens with the Razorback or the Pella," Holden said, "or if we get a message from Earth. Amos Burton or my family, either one." As if they were different.
"I think you've made that clear to the crew," Foster said solemnly, but with a glimmer of amusement in his eye.
Probably Holden had made the point a few times, to everyone. The coffee machine chimed and gave Holden a fresh bulb. Foster made his way to the ladder and then down toward the torpedo bays where Cousin Tsakis was cleaning things that were already clean. Holden waited a few seconds and then headed up to the ops deck. Chava, coming down, met him, and they did a little awkward no-you-first dance before they got past each other. Fred was in the crash couch that he'd appropriated as his office. The hatch to the cockpit was closed, but Holden could still hear the wailing of the Rai that Mfume liked to listen to during his shift in the pilot's seat. Between that and the coffee, he wouldn't be sleeping. But Fred had put headphones on and so didn't hear Holden coming. The image on his screen was familiar. Marco Inaros, the self-styled head of the Free Navy and public face of the devastation of Earth. And, Holden tried the thought carefully in case it hurt too much to think it, if Naomi was dead, the man who'd probably killed her. His chest contracted painfully, and he pushed the idea away. Thinking about Amos and Naomi was too dangerous. Fred turned sharply, noticing him, and pulled off the headphones.
"Holden, how long have you been there?"
"Just came up."
"Good. Hate to think I'm getting too feeble to know when there's someone in the room. Everything all right?
Apart from being in the middle of a system-wide coup with half of my crew missing? Peachy. I mean, I'm not sleeping, and when I do, it's nightmares from start to finish, but peachy."
"Well, it was kind of a stupid question, sorry about that."
Holden sat on the couch beside Fred's and leaned in.
What do we know about this guy?
Inaros? Fred said.
He was on my short list of possibilities when the rocks dropped. Not the head of it, but in the top five. He leads a splinter group of high-poverty belters, the kind of people who live in leaky ships and post screeds about taxation being theft. I've spoken to him a time or two, usually to de-escalate a situation he wanted to set on fire.
You think he's the one behind it all?
Fred sat back, his couch gimbals hissing as they shifted. From the headphones, Holden could hear the man's voice even over the murmurs of Rye.
We will begin again, and remake humanity without the corruption, greed, and hatred that the inner planets could not transcend.
Fred grunted and shook his head. I don't see it. Inaros is charismatic, and he's smart. Watching his press release, he certainly thinks he's in charge, but he'd have to. The man's a first-rate narcissist and a sadist besides. He'd never knowingly share power with anyone if he could help it.
This level of organization, of coordination, it seems beyond his reach.
How so?
Fred gestured toward the screen. The light from it glowed in his eyes, tiny images of Inaros giving his salute.
It doesn't feel right. He's the kind of man who carries a lot of weight in a small circle. Playing at this scale isn't what he does best. He isn't a bad tactician, and the timing of the attacks was showy in a way that seems like he was likely behind them. And he's charming at the negotiating table. But he's not a first-class mind. And this is a first-class operation. I don't know how to put it better than that. My gut says that even if he's taking credit for it, he has a handler.
What would your gut have said before the rocks dropped?
Fred coughed out a laugh. That he was an annoyance and a small-time player. So yes, it may just be sour grapes on my part. I'd rather think I was outplayed by someone who's a genius at something grander than self-mythologizing.
Do you have any idea why Naomi would be on his ship?
Fred's gaze shifted from the hazy middle distance of thought to directly on Holden.
Is that some place we want to go right now?
Do you?
I don't. But I can speculate. Naomi is a belter, and what I know of her says she grew up in the same circles as Inaros and his crew. I have to assume they crossed paths before and had some unfinished business. Maybe they were on the same side. Maybe they were enemies. Maybe both. But not neither.
Holden leaned forward, elbows on his knees. As general as they were, as gently as he'd said them, the words were like little hammer blows. He swallowed.
Holden, everyone has a past. Naomi was a grown woman when you met her.
You didn't think she'd popped out of the packaging right when you set eyes on her, did you?
No, of course not. Everyone on the Canterbury was there because they had a reason, including me.
It's just if there was something big, like part of a cabal that went on to destroy Earth big, I don't know why she wouldn't have told me.
Did you ask?
No. I mean, she knew that I was interested, that she could tell me whatever she wanted to tell me. I figured if she didn't want to, that was up to her.
And now you're upset that she didn't.
So what changed?
Why are you entitled to know things now that you weren't entitled to know before?
The Rye from the cockpit paused, silence filling the ops deck. On Fred's screen, the playback had reached the split circle as it faded to white.
I may, Holden said, be a small, petty person, but if I'm going to lose her, I at least need to know why.
We'll see if we can't put you in a position to ask her yourself, Fred said.
The music from the cockpit kicked in again, and Fred scowled up at the hatch.
If it's any comfort, I think we have a chance.
I don't think it'll be long before he's ready to open negotiations.
No?
Holden said.
It was such a thin sliver of hope, but he felt himself jumping to it all the same.
No. He got the jump on us tactically. I will absolutely give him that. But the next part is where he has to actually consolidate and hold power. That's not tactics. That's strategy. And I don't see anything in him that leads me to think he has a handle on that.
I do.
Fred waved a hand like Holden's words had been smoke and he was clearing the air.
He's playing a short run game. Yes, his stock's high right now and probably will be for a little while, but he's standing in the way of the gates.
All of this is to stop people from going out and setting up colonies. But the hunger is already out there. Smith couldn't stop Mars from depopulating itself. Avasarala couldn't put the brakes on the process, and God knows she tried. Marco Inaros thinks he can do it at the end of a gun, but I don't see it working. Not for long. And he doesn't understand fragility.
You mean Earth?
Yes, Fred said. It's the blind spot of being a belter. I've seen it over and over in the past few decades. There's a faith in the technology, in the idea of maintaining an artificial ecosystem. We're able to grow food on Ganymede, so they think humanity's freed from the bonds of Earth. They don't think about how much work we had to do for those crops to grow. The mirrors to concentrate the sun, the genetic modifications to the plants, the process of learning to build rich soil out of substrate and fungus and full-spectrum lights. And backstopping all of that, the complexity of life on Earth. And now these new worlds, well, I don't have to tell you how much less hospitable they are than it says on the box. Once it becomes clear that he's got it wrong, he doesn't, though, Holden said. Yeah, okay, the ecological part maybe he hasn't thought all the way through, but when it comes to the belt, he isn't wrong. Look at all the people who just pulled up stakes and headed out for the rings. Illis, or New Terra, or whatever the hell you want to call it. It's a terrible, terrible planet, and there are people living on it. All those colony ships that left Mars to go try terraforming a place that's already got air and a magnetosphere, a lot of those people are really, really smart. Even now, just now, you said how the pressure to get out to the new systems is more than this guy expects or is prepared for. That means he's doomed, maybe, but that doesn't make him wrong. We have to make him be wrong.
You think I don't know that? Fred said. What I was doing with Medina Station would have made a place for all the people living on Medina Station, but asteroid prospectors, water haulers, the crews that are barely eking by, those are who Marco's talking to. And he's right, because no one else is taking them into account. Not even you. They're looking at the future, and they're seeing that no one needs them anymore. Everything they do will be easier in a gravity well, and they can't go there. We have to make some kind of future that has a place for them in it. Because unless we do, they have literally nothing to lose. It's all already gone. The system chimed, and Mora's voice came over the speakers. Captain Holden, sir?
I'm here. Holden said, still looking at Fred's angry scowl.
And aren't you supposed to be off shift, Mr. Patel?
I am off shift, sir. But I couldn't sleep, so I was running some diagnostics. But Captain Sales said you wanted an alert if the situation changed with the Razorback and its pursuers?
Holden's mouth flooded with a metallic taste of fear.
What's going on?
We're getting reports that the Free Navy ships have broken off, sir. The UN forces are still half a day out. But the thought is, the Free Navy vessels are trying to steer well clear of any large-scale confrontation.
The Pella? Holden said.
With the Free Navy fleet, sir. But when they made the course change, a civilian ship broke off from the grouping, turning the other way. It's got a lot of inertia to overcome, but unless it changes its acceleration profile, it looks to be on a course that will bring it within a million clicks of us.
That's not accidental, Fred said.
It isn't, sir, Morris said. The vessel's registered as the Chetsmoka, and it's broadcasting a message on loop. Message follows.
Holden's knuckles hurt, and he forced himself to relax his fists. Naomi's voice filled the ops deck, and it was like being on the verge of passing out from dehydration and being handed a glass of water. As dire as the message was, Holden still felt every syllable untying his knots. When Naomi's message was done, he fell back in his couch, limp as a rag. She was in trouble, but it was trouble they could fix. She was on her way back toward him.
Thank you, Mr. Patel, Holden said. In thanks, you may now have all my stuff. I don't care about any of it anymore.
Including the coffee maker, sir?
Almost all my stuff.
When Fred spoke, his voice was hard, sharp, unrelieved.
Mr. Patel, what relief ships are in the vicinity?
Transponder data shows nothing, sir. The inner system's been pretty much shut down. UN order.
Holden rolled to his side and called up a connection to Mfume. Music blared out of the console. Mixed with the sounds filtering through the deck, it made the ops deck seem larger than it was.
Mfume! Holden shouted, and then a few seconds later, Mr. Mfume!
The music turned down, but not off.
Sir?
I need you to take a look at the flight path for the Chetsmuka. See what it's going to take to match orbits with her.
What ship?
Mfume said.
The Chetsmuka, Holden said.
Just check the news feeds. It'll be there. Let me know what you figure out as quickly as you possibly can. Like now would be good.
I'm on it, Mfume said,
and the music turned off, both on the console and from the hatch. Holden took a deep breath, then another, then laughed. The relief wasn't an emotion. It was too physical and profound for that. It was a state of being. It was a drug that poured invisibly through his veins. He started laughing, and it turned into a moan that sounded like pain, or else pain's aftermath. Fred clicked his tongue against his teeth.
So, if I were to suggest that we not rendezvous with that ship,
I would be happy to let you and your friends off anywhere between here and there, Holden said. Because unless you've decided to turn to piracy and throw me out the airlock, that ship is where we're going.
I thought as much, Fred said. Can we at least agree to be careful approaching it?
Holden felt a little bubble of rage rise up in him. He wanted to shout at Fred, to punish him for taking this moment and soiling it with doubt, with the possibility that it was a trap and not Naomi coming home at last. Holden took the great glowing sense of release and tried to put it aside and his anger with it.
Yes, he said. You're right. It could be a trap.
It may not be, Fred said.
I hope it isn't,
but we're living in interesting times, Holden said.
It's okay. I get it.
I'll be careful. We'll be careful. But if it is her, and she really is in trouble, she's my first priority.
That's just the way it is.
I know, Fred said. And the way he said it meant, I know. And everyone who knows anything about you does too. Which is why you should be careful. Holden turned to the monitor and pulled up the nav data. As he watched, Mfume laid in the course that would get him to Naomi. Or whatever else was on that ship. Fred's seed of doubt had already taken root. He didn't know whether to be grateful or resent the old man. Between the distances and their respective velocities, it looked like it would be tricky. Naomi had been burning hard toward Earth, and the speed the Chetsmuka had built up was almost all in the wrong direction to reach him. If it wasn't a trap, and Naomi was in trouble, he could still be too late. The UN force might be able to help, but she was already peeling away from their flight path, which still didn't leave him entirely without resources. He flipped to comms and started recording.
Alex, since you're in the neighborhood and it went so well the last time I asked you to check out a mystery ship, I was wondering if you'd be interested in making a little detour.